Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for Camp Notes from August 13th. This is the 17th day of Ravens training camp notes, and you get your daily dose right here. Temperature approximately 85, humid, but overcast. It was actually a pretty nice day, I thought, out there. The teams were in full pads, and it was a scored practice. Won very handily, by the way, by the defense. It was about 38-25 the last time I looked at the scoreboard, but they certainly held on for a comfortable victory in this practice. Now, before practice, we had a really nice visit from two NFL officials, a referee, Brad Rogers, and his umpire on his same crew, Brian Neal. And they gave us a lot of great information about the rules changes and some other things that have been in practice already that we might not have known all the details about. So they showed us a video of how Troy Vincent says he wants to make every play competitive and every snap matter. And to that end, they're trying to make more kickoff returns is one of the things that came out of that. So the dynamic kickoff was going to have the 35-yard line touchback, and then that was going to increase those returns. The overtime rules are changing, so both teams get the ball even after a touchdown. So they took all of the conditionality out of that. Let's see. And we talked about the replay assist. And I did not know this, but there are only four flags where the replay assistant in the booth can call down and say, wait a minute, that's not the way we saw it. You might want to pick that up. Now, they can't throw a flag. That's a very important consideration. But they can call down. They can say, well, that's not the way we saw it. We didn't see the contact that you suggest happen. The first is a face mask, second, horse collar tackle, the third, tripping, and the fourth is hits to the head. So helmet-to-helmet contact, but hits to the head. So the replay assistant can pick up the flag once again, but they can't create a flag, and any decision made by replay assistant is not challengeable or reviewable. So they just call down and they make that call. Now, they also were involved in spotting the football. Now, I did not realize how this worked. So as we've heard about the Hawkeye scoring system, and that worked off a spotted ball, making the judgment of whether the first down or not had been achieved electronically. But that involves spotting the ball correctly. Well, with the replay assistant, they now are in communication with the official and will tell the umpire, usually the umpire, I'm told, who spots the ball, not to spot the ball immediately, but to just wait a moment based on where the two wing judges are, the two that we would consider the lines, but I think one is the down judge and one is the line judge. But there's two guys on the two opposite sides of the field at the line of scrimmage. And those guys, you know, they move up and they kind of spot the ball themselves. They kind of run it towards the middle of the field at the line they think the ball is at. And then they move slightly towards the other guy to kind of even that out, to absorb any difference between the two spots that they saw. It's one of the ways you can tell, you know, obviously where the ball is at that point. And they say if the replay assistant saw something different, that they then can call down, tell them, hold on, wait a minute on spotting the ball. And then they kind of try and spot it, help them spot it, get the ball placed properly. And then they go on with a measurement if necessary, or they use the Hawkeye system to measure, and they move on from that. But they want to get that right. And that makes a lot of sense. I really, you know, got a lot better confidence going from them. Excuse me. They talked about crews that were out visiting various camps. They said there were about 10 such crews that are visiting camps. They're visiting four. Those guys stayed on to officiate the practice. They have meetings with players at these places. He said a very interesting thing. He said it humanizes each relative to the other. So players get humanized to the officials, and officials get humanized to the players. Both agree that they want the players and not the officials to be the topic of discussion the next day. And it's just about how they want to achieve that goal. In terms of the hip drop tackle, and that was the big rule change last year that required that had officials coming around talking about that to us. It was Cleet Blakeman last year who did that for the Ravens media. That they are very difficult to officiate. They have proven very difficult to officiate over this last year. That doesn't mean they won't try, and also doesn't mean they won't be looked at after the fact and be part of a fine or whatever might be ascribed to players. They talked about sportsmanship in two ways. This really was on the video more than that, but that they had no place for violent gestures like those using a gun or a fake gun, obviously, in this case, or when you stand over an opponent. Don't stand over an opponent after the play. You don't even walk over an opponent after a play. That'll be a foul typically. I asked him about one other thing, and that was the pregame meetings they have with the teams. And he told me it's this a group of four who goes, and it's 90 minutes before game time. It's the line judge, the field judge, the down judge, and the side judge, not the official, not the umpire or the referee to either place. And they go to each side, and they want to talk about any complexities, any plays or concepts, any trick plays that the team is going to run. They may even draw it up on a board just to make sure that the officials know what they're looking for and that the, you know, a formation or an alignment is correct, even though it may not be standard. That'd be a very typical thing. And then also at that 90-minute mark, the inactives are being delivered. And I think that is to the referee and possibly the umpire as well. So they're collecting those. maybe those four judges, which also collect those in that in those separate locker rooms. What else we got? There's a 50-minute mark. There is a clarification period that occurs on field, and that typically does involve the umpire and the referee, and they may talk to the coach, but they'll clarify anything that required a question be asked of them from these meetings that occur at the 90-minute mark. I thought this was all fascinating. It is pretty in the weeds, but still fascinating stuff about how the game is of football is officiated. Brad Rogers seemed like a very nice guy, and one of the things I have video, and I'm going to post this a little later, is he was on the sideline before practice, and they're running some other offensive line drills and other things that didn't require him, and he was playing with a bunch of kids and giving each of them the flag for a moment and giving them each a chance to throw a flag. And I thought I got some video of that you'll think it's adorable. It's a bunch of 4 and 5 year olds, you know, getting an opportunity to throw a flag. Let's go move on to the practice itself. So absent Emory Jones, Ardarius Washington, Isaiah Likely, those have been true for some time and they will be true for a long time. William Kwenku has a unknown injury and is still not back as of today. Keaton Mitchell and Jair Alexander, both missing. They were both put in they're all fine category by Harbaugh at the beginning of the week, but they haven't been back. Kyle Hamilton was on the sideline, not in uniform. Yesterday he was in uniform for this quarter speed, half speed practice they had. Today, not he wasn't. He was did a little bit of running on the side field. He was there watching practice from the side. He won't play at Dallas per Harbaugh's overarching comment on the thing, which was that none of the players who didn't play against the Colts will start or play against Dallas. So all those players will sit out. And I think there's going to be a few more too, because I don't think Keaton Mitchell could possibly play given that he's missed practice all week. And I'm not sure who else, but at least those players who didn't play against Dallas against the Colts will not play against Dallas. All right, moving on, returning to practice. I think we saw Marcus Major today, and let me confirm that because I'm not remembering that we saw Marcus Major today. Now I didn't record that. So Marcus Major returned previously, but I did not see him at practice today. So this is an old note here. Unfortunately, that probably means he's not available for the game. Now, fortunately, the Ravens have an extra running back or two. They have Dearness Johnson, who took the big workhorse share of the carries this last week. And now they have Miles Gaskin, who can take a similar share this week at Dallas. But they really are in a situation where they don't want to give a ton of carries, I'm sure, to Rasheen Ali or to Keaton Mitchell for certain. Mitchell probably will not even be available. So Ali may get 5 to 6 touches, but there will be a real question about that in terms of the last two will probably get most of the carries. Let's see. They had these set and snap drills for the 16th time in 17 practices. Another times two set of those. So at each end of the field, they got an 11-on-11 group that's getting a play in, quickly getting to the line of scrimmage, getting set up, going through motion, On the number two field, what I would judge to be the number two field by the players there, they had the additional 11th man on defense, the slot corner slash overhang, whatever you want to call that player, on the edge of the formation who could, who might move around or line up a lot of different ways. That player was a coach to try and get the offense used to that, you know, movement on the defense. The rest of the defensive players are basically just, you know, standing in the in their correct starting position and getting off quickly. But the, but this this coach is moving around and, you know, changing up the defense sort of as you would think of it on the fly. Tyler Loop. Now, he had an interesting day. He made 8 of 9 field goals on the day. Now, Jonas Schaefer has a slight difference, and I really trust Jonas for his observations, but I asked a couple other people. They had the same thing marked as me, but Loop made 8 of 9 today. He's good from 46, good from 33, good from 38, good from 41, good from 46, good from 52, good from 35, good from 25, and he missed from 48 wide right on his last attempt. So he's working on a perfect day before that. Now, he also, and this is the big one, they had a punt situation where a fair catch was called, and they put him on to try a 60-yard free kick off a punt. Like a way to get the players used to the rule and whatnot, and he made that one. So nobody else lines up there. He can just kick that direct. I think he can actually kick the ball off a tee in such situations, but he may have a holder there as well. But it's a free kick on that. All right, so we had a number of other highlights from 11 on 11 and 7 on 7. I'm going to read through some of these. I'm going to have to be a little bit quicker than normal because we're headed out to the Oriole game in a little bit. We start off with in punt drills. Tez Walker had a fantastic coverage play where he got to the ball inside the 5-yard line, really more like the 2-yard line, tapped it back into play, and deadened the ball such that it could be covered right around the 2-yard line. The offensive line, as usual, I watched them some. They used some, did some two-man sled. They do some blocking at two different levels. You know, so you have two linemen next to each other, and it's not a combination block. It's two guys moving to players at two different levels. I have not seen them often do that. They practice combination blocks a lot, but these kind of blocks I haven't seen often that they would do. And they did practice combination blocks later in that practice. Now, you've heard me talk about this drill before, but it's always one of the most fun is to see the running backs versus the inside linebackers. And I saw this happening after it had started. I ran over to see what I could, and I caught the last 5 reps. We had Miles Gaskin did a pretty good job holding up Teddy Buchanan on a play. Then we had Jake Hummel beating Luke Scott, who's a big man, for a pressure. We had Derrick Henry hold off Trenton Simpson was pretty effective because Simpson was being very slippery on the play. Simpson's a big man. He's very powerful too. Henry is even bigger, and he did a good job of holding him off despite the slipperiness involved. Then we saw Chandler Martin beat Justice Hill, and then Teddy Buchanan came back, and he beat number 30, Dearness Johnson, inside for what appeared to be a pressure, if not a sack. So interesting set of drills. In past years, they've had a handshake line after that drill because it's a very hotly contested drill and tempers can flare. This time, the whistle or the horn just went off for the end of that practice segment, and everybody just ran off to the next drill. So they didn't allow time for that in this one. But a great, highly competitive drill you get to watch. We then went off to 11 on 11, and I got some good highlights to talk about. We had a run right by Henry. It was a burst into space that maybe went about 7 to 10 yards, but it's a kind of play where it might have been something bigger, or it might not have been in a real practice. But he did look like he got into space quickly there. A little pass out to Derrick Henry. What was good about the play was not the pass or the catch, because it was right at the line of scrimmage towards the right sideline, but not all the way to the numbers. But he followed a really nice block by Patrick Ricard on Adisa Isaac. So that was impressive and good to see. Then we had Lamar throw a pass to Mark Andrews on the left sideline, about 15 yards. It was dropped. We had Rasheen Ali was trapped in the backfield by Mike Green for a 2-yard loss. He kind of reversed his field, and Green was right there containing the play from the backside and made a really nice tackle. Then he ran middle and was stuffed by Ajabo, maybe a 1-yard gain on that play. So a couple of nice plays by the defense. We saw a nice pass down the left sideline. It looked like it, I couldn't tell who it was intended for, but I did see that Lowry knocked the ball away. It's one of those plays where Lowry was not obscured, but the receiver was obscured by several players standing on the sideline. So I couldn't see that part of it, but definitely a nice play by Ruben Lowry. Had a pass for from Cooper Rush to Kirkwood, crossing 15 yards between the numbers and left hash. He beat MJ Devonshire, who's the newest Ravens cornerback, for about a 15-yard at-the-catch gain that looked like there was some yak involved on that, too. So Kirkwood, a nice play. Then we had Ali, a run middle for minus one. I'm not sure. I'm sorry, 0-1 yards. I'm not sure who really got the stuff on there. It looked like he was running into traffic. We had a pressure from David Ajabo on Rush, and Rush threw a little pass off to Ali, who beat Teddy Buchanan about 5 yards between the numbers and right hash. So a little bit of a play for Ali after getting stuffed a few times. Went back to other 11-on-11 drills, a different segment, and we saw Lamar throw out of bounds and into the crowd. Okay, so I was actually not watching at the snap, and the throw went to the right and went actually up into or near the stands where there's, you know, there's obviously there's fans there and somebody might get hit by the football. Did not seem like the overthrow need to be as far. It almost seems like that's the kind of ball that gets away on a shanked punt. But in any case, I didn't see any after the play emoting from say Lamar that, you know, he's sorry about it or whatever. I wasn't looking for it. I was there. The reason that he threw the ball away was that Wiggins was in the backfield on a pressure off that side. And yes, he probably was frustrated in part in terms of throwing the ball away, but I think maybe there's a talk with him about trying not to do that. All right. Then we had the 60-yard free kick from Loop, which was a kind of a really cool moment in practice. And John Harbaugh had some things to say about it. The podium we'll get back to. Had some one-on-one drills. Probably the most exciting of those was Zay Flowers beating Wiggins down the left sideline. And he kind of outmaneuvered Wiggins' body. And Wiggins had not turned to find the football in order to make that catch. So a nice job there. But he had to adjust to make that catch back to the inside. What else did we have here? We had in the next 11-on-11 segment, we had Derrick Henry reversing his field, running right for 15-plus yards. He definitely found space on that play, and the backside was just not properly contained on that play for the defense. We had Jackson went back to Andrews, who beat number 35. Now, why am I not remembering who that is? Because the Ravens don't have a number 35. So I might be not reading this correctly. It might have been Devonshire again. I'm sorry. 35 is Jake Hummel. Mark Andrews beat Jake Hummel 20 yards between the numbers and left hash. So that connection has not gone to hell just from that first drop, as if we thought that might be the case. Cooper Rush came in. He missed a pass to Dayton Wade. It was about 10 yards between the numbers and left hash. Did have Jay Higgins coming downhill quickly on that play, is actually closing the window from the opposite side. So that's good pass defense by Higgins to be able to do that. And it may have distracted Wade in a way on that miss. And I know someone else had that as a drop. It might have been Nick Mehta might have had it a drop at practice. We had the first of our flags thrown in the offense. This one was an illegal motion or a false start. Since they let the play go, it's probably an illegal motion. But you can't always tell because they're hesitant to throw the flags and blow the whistle, even on false starts sometimes during the camp. The next 11-on-11, one of the very first plays was a combined sack by Owe and Van Noy, and that'll be a really nice thing if we see a lot of those this year. The second, we had Lamar go for Dayton Wade 20 yards in the end zone and saw Malachi Starks get up to contest the ball. He may or may not have actually touched it for a pass defense, but in any case, he was there in pass defense and distracting Wade. So good play up for him on that. We had a pressure by Marlon Humphrey, and that resulted in an overthrow of Wallace, who was covered by Higgins. Still Lamar in the game on that one. We had a Lamar throwing to Tez Walker, 15 yards by the right sideline. Beautiful back shoulder throw with Wiggins in coverage. That's the kind of play that we need to see more of from Tez Walker, those routes where he has to come back and help the quarterback out on getting the football. Now, the next play was also to Tez Walker, but it was knocked down by Lowry, 15 yards between the numbers and left hash. So Lowry already is having a pretty big practice at this point. Cooper Rush, I'm sorry, that was from Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush threw for Mitchell Payton, and the ball was knocked down by Keandre Jackson. Cooper does not throw a particularly pretty ball, kind of hangs up in the air for a long time. Leary is not always super accurate, but he throws like he's trying to throw a snowball through a blast furnace, so to speak. And that's he throws very hard, and Cooper Rush throws more of a touch ball. And a lot of those ended up being knocked down when they're in the field of play. Then we saw Cooper Rush make a really nice play to Jamal Banks, toe tap in the back of the end zone against Braid, who kind of just shrugged his shoulders is like, what am I supposed to do? As he scored the touchdown there. And that, I don't know that I didn't really like the body language from Braid, but there was a kind of a futility of his own position in the play that it didn't sit with me as well. And if you saw the body language, you'd probably think something of it, whether it was, oh, that's no problem, or I don't like that at all. So it was somewhere in the middle for me, but it was more towards the, I don't really like that. Really nice toe tap there by Jamal Banks, by the way. Rush tried to hit Banks again at the left pylon, and that was on either the next play or one play later, and there was a pass defensed by TJ Tampa there, and that, again, that was right at that left pylon at the front of the end zone there. Jackson came in the back of the game. He threw a 40-yard pass to Bateman, who beat Chidobe Awuzie down that left sideline. And this has kind of been a somewhat of a recurring theme, is Sanusi Kane was late to bracket on that play. Now, it's not easy to get all the way to the sidelines, particularly when you're single high, and I did not see exactly how he lined up to start that play. So if just one thing I keep saying is you don't have the benefit of instant replay or of the multiple speeds of reversing your DVR footage to get it just right so you can see it that I have at home when I'm analyzing a game. So it looked to me like Kane was just late getting over, and there may have been a good reason for it, or there may not have been. Next play, threw a crossing route for Wade that went 25 plus zero, I would say, right in the middle of the field. And 21 was, again, apparently late closing in on that play. Now, there's two possibilities of how that should have been covered. One is that he had trail responsibility, and the second is that he had to pick up that player between level 2 and 3. And I didn't really look to see what the coverage was on the play. So this was a case of I know that Kane probably should have been the coverage guy at that point, but he wasn't. 44 was underneath generally on that side, but didn't look like Humphrey was the one who was responsible for it. All right, next play, we had Kyle Van Noy get another pressure, and Lamar overthrew Wallace. It was about 25 yards down the right sideline. There was coverage by Keandre Jackson on the play, but he did not. It did not seem like he should have. He was in a position to get a pass defense to the ball. It's more like he was just providing a little bit of overlapping circle for Lamar to see. And I wouldn't call that a forced overthrow, what happened on that play. All right. We saw Rush escape the pocket and run for about 12 yards up the middle. So nice when they could do that, obviously. They moved to 7-on-7 drills after a number of field goal attempts that were all hit by Loop here. Jackson threw to Wallace on a 20-yard throw between the numbers and right hash. It was over Simpson and high off his hands, and unfortunately, it was incomplete. I didn't say that earlier. It was really through 8-4-16 instead of 8-2-16, which is the way a prepositional difference I make in my notebook about this, but didn't seem to have that this time. But anyway, ball was high off his hands. It did get tipped up where it might have been in play by a defender, but no defender was able to get their hands underneath it. Then another throw from Wallace was 15 yards over the middle of the field. That was complete and beat Wiggins on a crossing route. Wiggins has had some tough coverage moments the last couple of couple of days. It's probably something the Ravens have to hope will get itself cleaned up. He's not going to play in Dallas. That's the.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You know, the call that's been made here. So it'll be interesting to see the next time he sees live fire, maybe in the opener, and he'll probably see a little bit against Washington in the scary as hell joint practice that the two teams are holding in Washington next week. So that's only 8 days away. Let's discuss that for a second, just because I think it's a real question. I was talking to Jeff Z on the sideline today, and, you know, I asked the question, is it scary as hell to have a joint practice before your third game as opposed to before your second? And normally it's been the first or second game that they've had this joint practices prior to and not the third game. You know, your regulars, you never play in the third game. They've already announced they're not going to play in the second game. So basically the number of people they're trying to get through that third game with is going to be, it's going to be pretty shorthanded. But they do tend to play in joint practices, and joint practices are a tremendous source of injury. And I would just hope that that they are super, super careful about how they comport themselves in that practice with the Commanders. And yes, I still want to say Redskins. All right. We had a throw from Jackson to Wester. This one was behind Wester, 10 yards between the numbers in the left hash. It was off his hands. He had kind of twisted his body backwards to get a catch on the ball, but Lamar tapped his chest after the play as he kind of was looking at Wester, so it's clearly he thought it was his fault for not hitting him in stride. Then he overthrew Bateman 30 yards down the left sideline. In that time, TJ Tampa had good coverage. That was, I would think, more of a forced overthrow where had the ball been kind of on schedule out, there would have been a chance for a PD, at least if it wasn't thrown perfectly. So TJ Tampa, good coverage on that play. Then Lamar threw a ball high for Wade, 15 yards between the hash marks, and nice tight coverage by Keandre Jackson underneath. So it probably needed to be thrown high to keep the ball safe, but it just was a very tough contested catch to make. It was off his hands. Then the next time we saw Rush on the field, he threw wildly incomplete for Dearness Johnson by the left sideline. Now, first of all, very extended pocket time. So he's got probably took 6 or 7 seconds to get the football off at all. And then when he did throw it, he threw it way behind 30. And he indicated by gesture after the play that he was expecting Johnson to do something different. But it does seem to me, if I have to say this, that Cooper Rush really has a very low tolerance for risk on any throw. And part of it is it's appropriate because his arm strength is not that great. But we're also seeing that it doesn't lend itself probably well to pressure situations, that he's going to have a lot more throwaways whenever there's any real form of pressure. And that's a little scary, you know, going into a season, if Cooper Rush were needed for 2 games or for 4 games, I don't think I'm nearly as confident in the outcome of those games as I would have been about the time he was signed. Leary came in the game. He threw an absolute bullet to Guillory. It was 5 yards by the right sideline. So this sort of thing would not even register other than the fact that he threw a fastball over to that right side, and MJ Devonshire was the defensive back that he beat. At this point, the defense is only leading, 31-28 at this point, and the lead got extended significantly from that point. The next play, there's a pressure by David Ajabo. David Ajabo recovered a pitch fumble by Derrick Henry. So the pitch was on a play where Lamar was kind of starting the run, and then he pitched to Henry, and the ball got loose on the ground, and David Ajabo covered it up. So the offense took it over. The defense took over the ball right there. We saw Lamar throw a 25-yard pass to Zay Flowers. It was just overthrown. We had 38, who is Deion Martin, was in trailing coverage. I didn't think he was that close. So this one is more of an overthrow and less of a forced overthrow. So it is what it is. Next play, we had Teddy Buchanan in the backfield to take down Justice Hill for a loss of 4 on a run left. Kind of play where a Hill tried, maybe ill-advisedly, to outrace Buchanan by bubbling on that side and got taken down doing it. Then we had Rush back on the field. He threw a pass for Ali that was off his fingertips by the left sideline. You can see that the stuff is really starting to go wrong for the offense right now. The very next play, Rush threw for Guillory again. It was about 12 yards by the left sideline. Ball was intercepted by TJ Tampa. This had a halfway decent week, I'd have to say. Certainly an interception is always a good thing, and he had some other good defensive plays in this one. I did mention against the Colts, TJ Tampa got really picked on, got thrown out a lot. Now he's out there for all 80 snaps, but the Colts really went after him instead of some other guys who don't really have a great reputation. Like Marquise Robinson was playing on the other side for a part of the game, and he ended up looking pretty good. They had Keon Martin in the game, at least at nickel, for a lot of the snaps that Tampa was in the second half, and they didn't go after him really all that much. So JAD at times was in there. They chose to go after Tampa more than anybody else this last week. Okay, next big play, we have Leary is in the game, and Malik Ham got inside or got in the backfield and took down Dearness Johnson for a 3-yard loss. We had Leary throw a pass to Wester. Again, another bullet was off his hands, about 15 yards. That was complete. He beat MJ Devonshire 15 yards between the hash marks. Okay. We had Jay Higgins stuffing Miles Gaskin. That gain was maybe about 2 yards on the next play. Then we saw Leary overthrow Jamal Banks 15 yards down the left sideline. That was Marquise Robinson in cover on that play. Then we moved on to the two-minute drill. The big plays during that, Lamar threw for Lamar threw for Charlie Kolar. And that was about 10 yards between the numbers and left hash. This time, Kane had tight coverage. He did maintain the catch through contact nonetheless. So Kane, you know, laid up pretty hard cross chop on the arm and ball after the play, but it didn't come loose. So good play by Kohler. Lamar then threw for Walker. It was about 45 yards down the left sideline. He did overthrow that one. He had a Woozie was in coverage. I think this is another case where he's trailing and it's more of an unforced error that Lamar underthrew the ball for him. So, unfortunate. We had Mike Green get in on pressure. Look, I don't always note the position of the pass rushers before the play, particularly with the risk of brother-in-law play and the non certainty of sacks. You know, you got to kind of pick and choose what you're looking at. But this play, he was in quickly. It appeared he might have looped or stunted through the middle of the formation, like through the A gap potentially. The ball was blown dead, and really good looking play there from Mike Green, and that also ended that drive, that 2 minute segment there. So they sent Leary on the field, and that's an interesting point. This is Leary instead of Rush as the second team quarterback in this situation, and he threw a couple short balls. Buchanan had a quick tackle. Buchanan pushed Jamal Banks out of bounds. Then he escaped up the middle, ran for about 10 yards. They kept him on for another set of downs. He threw a ball for Jamal Banks that was about 20 yards between the numbers and the right hash. Did not see who was in coverage, but the ball was incomplete. Then Leary threw one for Anthony Miller. Anthony Miller made a nice little play after the catch with the ball. So it was maybe 5 plus 10 along that left boundary. He was setting up to pass as Braid blitzed the quarterback. And this is the second time in just a few games, or just a few days, I should say, that Braid has gotten a PD in the backfield. And I think both times he came off the right edge to do it. So, I think the Ravens are committed to rushing corners and safeties, which we've already seen make several pass rush plays during this practice alone. Humphrey had a pressure, and Wiggins was in there causing trouble at one point. So I think the Ravens are committed to continuing to use their corners and safeties to blitz when they see fit. Then we had a field goal by Loop that was no good wide right. Then they had some pass rush drills. Tough to get really great information on this. I was trying to stand up where at least the line of sight was good. And it always helps when you have two or three or even four people watching these pass rush drills, because there's multiple things going on and you kind of got to time it out in your head for how long it's going. But Travis Jones looked very, very good in terms of the pressure he got. In one case, he worked off a pick that was set by Van Noy to get pressure. So that's nice to see instead of the other way around, which is probably the way we've seen it, more in their time together or in his time with Matabike for that matter. Broderick Washington got good pitch on Carson Vinson for pressure. Mike Green had beat Vinson straight up, arrived at the quarterback, and delivered a pretty significant hit. In fact, I would go as far as to say that's the biggest hit laid on a player wearing a non-contact jersey this whole camp. And he was very excited about it after the fact. Probably gets a talking to about that. Then Ajabo had a pressure versus Noteboom. Might have been a holding call as well. I think either Ryan or Jonas noted that there was a flag on the field after that play. Kamen Rucker beat the right guard Holsky inside for a pressure. Then the offensive line got a couple of wins in a row. The second one was a really nice pocket. Now, there's no one to throw the ball to. These drills are just four rushing against five, and sometimes there's a running back in as well who has to help with that protection. They may even have it where they have a tight end in occasionally, and it may have a specific set or chip responsibility on the play, but I'm mostly watching 4-on-5 action is what I was seeing. And then we had Malik Ham, Bull Van Shed, the right tackle, Christian Lichtenhahn. Lichtenhahn hasn't looked terrible in pass blocking, but he's a very long-armed dude, exceptionally tall tackle. Does look a little soft physically, but I thought that was a good play. All right, we'll see if my dog can calm down now, and we'll talk some interviews. So John Harbaugh was first at the podium. He said a few things. He said, they'll have a practice tomorrow. I imagine it's in the morning because I think they're traveling to Dallas, and then they have a walkthrough on Friday. But the practice today is tomorrow is closed to the media, and they'll just be in shells. So I'm not expecting to practice in pads again before Saturday, and that should be good. He's asked about the Phelps and Ray Lewis visits yesterday. He said, you know, it's two of the best ever at their occupations. You know, once in a lifetime opportunity to get messages from two people like that, and you know, he talked about how special that was. They talked about the swimming event a little bit. And Travis Jones apparently was a second person. Roquan Smith, there's been video published of him, you know, learning how to swim. Roquan said he can doggy paddle about 20 yards already, but he doesn't really know how to swim. And Travis Jones, I think, may even know less than that. But both of them were trying to learn how to swim. There may have been others. He was asked about, you know, whether or not this was a good bonding experience, because in part, they're doing this as a bonding experience. I think in part they're doing it as just a cool experience because Michael Phelps is involved in the swimming. Harbaugh apparently didn't go to it. He said he got the injury report after he saw no one was hurt, but he might not have been all that happy to watch them jumping, cannonballing off the high boards. So that was kind of an interesting comment, but I wouldn't be too happy to see them, you know, going off the high boards either, to be honest, whether they're diving or cannonballing. Talked a little bit about the free kick in practice, and they tried some other things too. They tried some end of game practice things the other day. It was just done at half speed, so I didn't really get at the heart of the thing, other than what you're supposed to do, as opposed to you know, what did happen, whether or not it was a competitive practice play. It wasn't that the other day, but the loop kick was kind of special. He did mention that he always thought, as a special teams coach, he'd have the first opportunity to try one of those, but John Harbaugh. His brother had tried one already, and I think they made it. I think that the Chargers maybe made one. It was the first time there'd been a made free kick in a very long time, in decades. I have to go back and look at that again. But the kick by loop from 60 yards, the distances are getting longer on field goals. It's very clear. The Jacksonville had a 70-yard field goal made in their first game. And I've seen a video that talks about one of the reasons that may be true is because they're using K-balls that the team now has time to doctor them up and get them worked in before the game. I think they get the balls the day before, and that gives them time to get them scuffed up and softened up to the point where a kicker can have better control over that ball in theory. And that may be some of the reasons for some of the longer kicks we've seen. So it'll be interesting to see how long Justin Tucker's field goal record lasts, but my money would be it lasts a hell of a lot less time than Tom Dempsey's record did. Already, you know, what the Dallas kicker is within 1 yard of Tucker's all-time record, and it took a long time for anybody to kick another field goal over 56 yards, I believe. I'd have to look back at that on Stathead or something, but it took him a long time to kick a kick over 56 yards after Dempsey kicked 63 to beat the previous record of 56 yards. By the way, a little bit of Baltimore history there. The first 56-yard field goal ever made was made by Bert Rechichar, and it was made in the Baltimore Colts' very first game coming back to the NFL in 1953. So kind of a little bit of history. And I think if I'm thinking correctly, Rechichar has the fifth worst, I think, field goal percentage in NFL history, and it's one of the safest records you'll ever see. There'll be no one ever there because the minimum is 50 kicks, and his percentage is like 35% or something, and you couldn't possibly have someone last 50 kicks in the NFL currently if they were going to kick 35%. At a 35% success rate, they'd be replaced long before that. So Rechichar's fifth from the bottom spot is completely safe. And of course, Harbaugh made the comment that the same guys who did not play against the Colts will not play against the Dallas. And again, I think they probably have additions to that. I think the Ravens are going to be playing very shorthanded in this next game. Some guys who will get great playing time, Carson Vinson, TJ Tampa. But what I'll ask you to do is tomorrow night, I'll be recording a What to Look For with Frazier Tafar for the Dallas game. There should be a lot of interesting things, a lot of really good trials coming that we'll talk about. And some of it will involve the end of the roster spots, you know, like CJ Okoye is very much in position for one of those spots. But some of it will just be who makes the practice squad as opposed to being cut outright or being a candidate to be traded. The Dallas game does matter, and that final game matters as well. And for a player like Troy, for Carson Vinson, who's going to be on the team this year, that's an opportunity to get 120 snaps of left tackle play that he might not otherwise get until 2027 in terms of live fire. He'll probably get some time in the 26 preseason as well, but I don't think he'll play in 25 during the regular season, at least not any appreciable amount. And in 26, I think I would probably say it's more likely than not that he'll sit out that season as well. So we'll see how that'll go. And these are really big live fire opportunities for these young players. All right, Willie Taggart, the running backs coach, was up next to the stand. He was asked about dividing the reps between a talented group of running backs. He said the division between Hill and Henry is very natural with passing downs going to Hill. And he thinks Keaton Mitchell will be on the field a lot as well. That is my supposition too. Jeff and I were talking about it again today and what would be an over under. And he said, do you think he'll play 8 to 10 snaps a game? And I said, in terms of the games he's healthy, I'd probably take the over on 10 snaps based on what we've seen. He's too damn good. And he's too damn useful as a gadget weapon. He's an incredible pair of fresh legs to put on the field when you've got a defense huffing and puffing a little bit. So I think he'll get his regular backfield carries, and then I think he'll get a lot more carries, or not necessarily touches, but he'll be on the field a lot more in Pony as a flanker, as a gadget player, making use of him in jet motion to keep the other team on their back foot. All of those are potential uses for Mitchell, and I think they will use him liberally if he has early season success that I expect him to have. He mentioned that Derrick Henry practices like he's a rookie. LaJonte Wester, who played for him in college, he said that Wester predicted in advance of the game, I believe. Now, I might be misquoting this, and please listen to the interview and you'll get the exact quote. But he said he was going to introduce himself to the city of Baltimore on Thursday night. Of course, he did exactly that with a couple of receptions and a couple of really amazing punt returns, which are something probably we have not seen anything as good since the days of Jermaine Lewis in terms of the lateral elusiveness he showed. He was asked about Derrick Henry's stiff arm. And he said, yeah, I think it causes a few business decisions. But when you see him up close and you see he's going to get those big mitts on you, you know it might hurt. He was asked about when he thought he knew that Keaton Mitchell was back. And he said, when he ran past players in camp, and he's been the best player in camp, but he's outraced to the edge. He's had great field vision. He's burst through holes when he sees them. And he always seems to be running free in space much more than any other running back. And normally, like I say, I can't really make a lot of declarative statements about running backs from their camp play, but Mitchell's been outstanding. But he said when he saw that had signaled his return to 2023 form. He also, he's happy now. He walks around telling jokes. He has confidence in his movement on the field. And the other thing he said is he's much better in pass protection this year, which was good. Hill had a comment about that a little later as well. Willie Taggart was also asked about the scoring that's in the position group rooms. And he said it's the first thing the players look at when they get into the room is how did they score in the previous practice. And there's probably some things about speed, but there's also some other little things that they hate to get a bad grade in. And he says, that's great when people hate to get a bad grade. And that's terrific. Again, you've heard me tell the story before, so I'll just tell you, it sounds like Scooby-Doo bonus points in a lot of ways, but at least they're keeping it visible to the players. And they're maybe more engaged in camp just because of it. Cooper Rush, the podium, not too much to say from him, but he was looking forward to the return to Dallas. He said that Dallas was in play to re-sign him, but Baltimore came in at the last minute And it was a great opportunity to play here. And then he said a lot of things that I don't know if I really believe them, that they were part of the calculus when he signed with Baltimore. I think it really could have just come down to money. He'd be leaving Dallas in a place that is just a mid-range playoff contender to go to Baltimore, which certainly is a Super Bowl contender. But I don't know that that was the reason to do it. To come and back up Lamar Jackson might not be a great career move either, as opposed to a quarterback like Dak Prescott who has some reasonable injury history that he might get in there and see some time. He said, this is the best answer of all. Do you want to show Dallas you can play on Saturday night? And I'm paraphrasing this, but he said, right now, I want to show the Ravens I can play. That is my feeling exactly. But go out and listen to it. If I have paraphrased that slightly, I have captured the meaning, but it might be funnier if you could see the look on his face as he said it. All right, Justin Hill is next at the podium. Willie Taggart called him a junkyard dog because he really knows his role. I thought that was an interesting kind of a name for him. I asked him about, does he miss special teams? Because he no longer plays special teams now that he has this big role on the offense. He said, yeah, I do, and I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the special teams play that I had earlier on. So he says he does kind of miss it. I don't know if we'll see Hill maybe returning some kickoffs this year, but there is a risk, and it's a good reason that a lot of teams might consider carrying a fourth running back. One of the reporters asked him if there was any additional confidence that he gained from his extension. I think this is the second extension for Hill because he got extended for a year, and I think before he played the second year of that two-year deal, he was extended again. And he said yes and no. He's always a confident guy. But it was a demonstration of trust by the team. So again, listen to the interview. You'll capture his exact words. And then he talked about pass protection, and largely it came up because of Keaton Mitchell and the fact that Hill is a pretty good pass protector. And he said that pass protection for a running back is a matter of want to, and that many running backs get to college with very little practice in it. And that's of course true because the Division I running backs all tend to be guys who can tote the rock as opposed to block. And they may have gotten a upper end high school, like something you might get at St. Francis where it's no block, no rock kind of thing. They may have gotten that kind of coached up that way in high school, but most of them, they get to college and they don't really have a lot of experience with it. Anyway, that's all I have for notes today. Thanks for listening. Got a few things coming up now. So the rest of the week, we're going to have no more camp notes. There will be two things, a Friday morning GM. There will be one produced this week. We have a few things we want to talk about. Keep an eye out for that. With Frazier Tafar, I'll have the what to look for against Dallas. So those will both be there. And then, of course, we'll jump right in after the Dallas games with the new usual analysis articles and podcasts that follow that. So thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you again next time on Film Study.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.